Hello, this is Colin Curry, podcasting from EdgeCause 2010. I'm joined for a conversation today with Patrick Dreher, Chief Scientist for Cloud Computing at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Thanks for joining us, Patrick.
Hi, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
To get us started, why don't I give you an opportunity to talk about cyber infrastructure and what it means and how we'll apply that term to this conversation.
Great, thanks. So, I mean, in my view, cyber infrastructure really consists of computational systems, data and information management, advanced instruments, visualization environments, and people, all linked together by software and advanced networks to improve scholarly productivity and enable knowledge breakthroughs and discoveries not otherwise possible. And that's a mouthful, but it really... signifies the complexity of IT and the complexities that universities face in terms of providing the necessary resources and infrastructure for faculty and researchers and students to pursue research and to pursue advanced teaching and learning and education. So it's a complex subject.
Okay. What's the U.S. government's stance on supporting cyber infrastructure? How do they get involved in this?
Well, I think there's probably several ways that they get involved. And I can think of one in a direct way, and probably several more in a more indirect way. I can imagine the National Science Foundation probably supports educational programs associated with advancement in science, and there's a whole section of the National Science Foundation involved in learning and teaching, and they support programs along those lines. And some of those programs indeed involve working with some of the topics that we just discussed in the definition. And so there are probably direct solicitations from organizations like NSF, and probably in the Department of Education, they also have similar type programs. Perhaps the larger of the two support efforts is more of an indirection. Most agencies like to fund the science and the engineering directly. How does it impact the faculty? How does it impact the researchers? How does it impact students? And most proposals and solicitations and grants are put together with that express viewpoint and with that express goal and objective in mind. In the course of trying to achieve that goal and objective, they need to have the necessary infrastructure and support systems in place to fulfill the programs that they are indeed funding. Some of them might be visualization, some of them could be teaching, some of them could be research, some of them could be experimental classrooms, but that whole underlying mix that knits the whole process together would be the cyber infrastructure. So for the most part, of the government doesn't fund cyber infrastructure for the sake of cyber infrastructure, except for some very specific things. But it inevitably creeps into the grants and proposals and funding because the objectives that people are trying to accomplish from funding these things couldn't be possible and couldn't be accomplished without cyber infrastructure.
Okay. To what degree can multiple institutions cooperate and, if you will, piggyback on each other's resources?
That is a really timely question. In this economic climate, universities are recognizing that nobody can do everything, and even the things that people pick and choose to do, not everybody can be the best at that. And so there is probably a more active program than has ever been seen for universities to reach out to try to cooperate with each other to get economies of scale, to group expertise, knowledge, experience so that they can share. And so what you're seeing today is universities, especially in the local geographic area where they may find themselves, reaching out with cooperative programs, with support structures, with workshops, experimental programs to work together to harness resources, to not have duplication of activities, duplication of equipment, And the processes, again, the duplication and the economies of scale are all aligned for particular things. If they might be computational systems, they might be data information management, maybe they'll share a visualization facility, all of those types of aspects. So yes, the universities are very definitely interested in cooperating simply because the economies are driving the thing in that direction.
It's a way to make it work.
Yes.
What are the top three pieces of advice you would give to a CIO whose research community is clamoring for more research IT support than the central IT organization can provide them?
Regardless of the particular details and the particular cultural aspects of how each university operates, there is a common thread, and that is that faculty who are performing research, the research is becoming much more collaborative, much more interdisciplinary, much more multi-institutional. And so the days of the scientist or the engineer laboring quietly in a small little one-room lab with a light and working on a bench all by themselves, there is probably still some of that, and that's a particular aspect. But for the most part, science is a team sport, and engineering is a team sport. And because of that, faculty need much more collaborative systems. They need much more infrastructure support. They need much more exchange of data, computing systems. And within their own research lab, within their own department, or within their own research group, and sometimes within their own research university, they don't have all the necessary resources. And so they naturally will turn to the CIO, who may or may not have any charge from the senior administration to support research computing or not. I think there's an ECAR study, several actually ECAR studies, that have shown that the pendulum is actually swinging from the perspective where IT professionals just had hands off for research computing. Now it's swinging back where, because of these complexities, that the faculty cannot do this themselves entirely within their own small research grant or budget. And so they're reaching out to the CIO. So I think the first three things is for the CIO to reach out and sit down and talk with the faculty, find out, you know, it's amazing. Sit down, have a beer with a faculty member, find out what it is they do, what they need. And so to reach out, to try to understand the unique problems that the faculty and the researchers have. The second thing is to identify where it might be possible for the CIO and the central IT organization to partner with the faculty. Now, some of that will require money. Some of it might not require money. Some of it might just require restructuring the central IT's organization and their resources. So within the same budget, by reshuffling the way the CIO's organization does business, they might be able to provide some level of support. The third thing that can happen is for both the CIO and the faculty member to put together a plan or a set of priorities, and for if they need additional resources, both to go together to the senior administration. Most CIOs are not tenured faculty members, and provosts will politely listen to another senior administrator like a CIO, but the provost, who usually control the purse strings and the faculty lines, will be much more persuaded if they have a large group or an influential group of senior faculty sitting down in the provost's office saying, look, this is important, this is essential to our research, and we're partnering with the CIO and the IT organization, we've worked out some cooperative things, and this is what we need to make it happen. So the first thing is to listen. The second thing is to try to identify areas of partnership. And the third thing is to put together a plan in cooperation and conjunction with the faculty on the campus. And I think those three things, if they are done together, can be very successful in advancing objectives.
Sounds like great advice.